October 7th, the year 2000, Rob Rob speaking in Louisville, Kentucky. Today's topic is the era of soulfulness and spirituality is useless. Okay, it says we're recording. Hi, everybody. So I have some fun emails for you that I want to start with that pertain to our topic today. And the first one's called Heavy Thinking. You guys heard about heavy thinking? It started out innocently enough. I began to think at parties, now and then to loosen up. Inevitably, though, one thought led to another, and soon I was more than just a social thinker. I began to think alone, to relax, I told myself, but I knew it wasn't true. Thinking became more and more, thinking all the time. I began to think on the job. I knew that thinking and employment didn't mix, but I couldn't stop myself. I began to avoid friends at lunchtime so I could read Thoreau and Kafka. I would return to the office, dizzied and confused, asking, what is it exactly we're doing here? Things weren't going so great at home either. One evening I turned the TV off, turned to my wife and asked her about the meaning of life, and she spent the night at her mother's. I love that. I soon had a reputation as a heavy thinker. One day the boss called me and he said, Skippy, I don't know why they Skippy. So I just love it. It's so incongruous with this whole thing. Skippy, I like you. And it hurts me to say this, but your thinking has become a real problem. If you don't stop thinking on the job, you'll have to find another job. This gave me a lot to think about. I came home early after my conversation with the boss. Honey, I confessed, I've been thinking. I know you've been thinking, and I want a divorce. But surely, honey, it's not that serious. It is serious, she said with her lower lip a quiver. You think as much as a college professor, and college professors don't make any money. So if you keep on thinking, we won't have any money. That's a faulty syllogism, I said impatiently, and she began to cry. I had enough. I'm going to the library, I snarled, and I stomped out the door. I headed for the library in the mood for some Nitschke. With a PBS station on the radio, I roared into the parking lot, ran up to the big glass doors. They didn't open. The library was closed. To this day, I believe that a higher power was looking out for me that night. As I sank to the ground, clawing at the unfeeling glass, a poster caught my eye. Friend, is heavy thinking ruining your life? It asked. You probably recognize that line. It comes from the Standard Thinkers Anonymous poster, which is why I am here today, a recovering thinker. I never miss a TA meeting. At each meeting, we watched a non-educational video. Last week, it was Caddyshack. That goes along with Skippy. Then we share experiences about how we avoided thinking since the last meeting. I still have my job, and things are a lot better at home. Life just seemed easier somehow as soon as I just stopped thinking. So that actually ties in with what we're doing today. I thought you guys, in case you don't get some of these, I get hundreds, share some pretty amazing ones with you. I'm going to go back and forth in different themes. These are rhetorical questions. Name the 5 wealthiest people in the world. Name the last 5 Heisman Trophy winners. Name the last 5 winners of the Miss America contest. Name 10 people who have won the Nobel or Pulitzer Prize. You guys should know this stuff. Name the last half dozen Academy Award winners for Best Actor or Actress. Name the last decade's worth of World Series winners. So how'd you do? Well, we don't have any Double Jeopardy winners in here. So here's another quiz. Bearing in mind that you can do great today, but tomorrow it's useless. List a few teachers who aided your journey through school. Name 3 friends who have helped you through a difficult time. Name 5 people who have taught you something worthwhile. Think of a few people who have made you feel appreciated and special. Think of 5 people who you enjoy spending time with. And name a half dozen heroes whose stories have inspired you. Point is, you know, pretty easy to see. It's most important are the ones that we are connected with, not those useless facts. And when we talk today, we're going to talk about spirituality as useless. It's right up there with name the type top 5 spiritual people you know, and we'll play with that. 5 steps. Stage number 1. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost, and it is hopeless. It isn't my fault, and it takes forever to find a way out. Step 2. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I believe it, I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault, and it still takes a long time to get out. Step number 3, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am, and it is my fault. And I get out immediately. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Step number 5, I walk down another street. And I'm going to address that today, too. A couple of weird ones for you. This one, it won't seem like it ties in, but it'll make more sense later. It was a final examination for introductory English course at the local university. The examination was 2 hours long, and the exam booklets were provided. The professor was very strict and told the class that any exam that was not on his desk exactly in 2 hours would not be accepted and the student would fail. A half hour into the exam, a student came rushing in and asked the professor for an exam booklet. "You are not going to have time to finish this," the professor stated sarcastically and handed the student a booklet. "Yes, I will," replied the student, and he took to his seat and began writing. After 2 hours, the professor called for the exams, and all the students filed up and handed them in except for the late student who continued writing. A half hour later, the student came up, handed the professor the paper as he was preparing for his next class, and the professor said, "No, you don't. I'm not going to accept that. It's late." And the student looked incredulously and angry. "Do you know who I am?" "No, as a matter of fact, I don't," said the professor. "Do you know who I am?" said the student again. "And no, I don't. And I don't care," replied the professor with an air of superiority. "Good," replied the student. He quickly lifted up the stack of exams, put his exam there, and slammed it down, walked out the room. Sometimes it's best to know jack shit. Sometimes it's best not to be known. You know, all this, I just love that. Now, this is a first of a series of 150 exercises that a friend of mine just started putting out, and he gives them to emails to people. He wanted me to promote them, and not only that, I love them. This is the very first one he sent me, and so far he's sending me one a day. I'm on the 18th, and his name is Edge. And I always figured he was on the edge, but his folks knew how to name this guy, this big yellow. And the name of this exercise is Good Bad John. And so I just love this. Read the exercise, focus seriously, be scientific, conduct the experiment, and ask yourselves what the follow-up questions. Discover your subtle workings, and with a new self-trust, find your life being based on a refreshing inner authority, based on a deeper comfort, and the new understanding of your psychological dynamics. I've never heard him talk like that in my life. It must have been his wife helped him with that part. Read the following amusing tale of evil. Now it sounds like him. John takes a bottle of milk from a hungry baby. A perverse dictator has ordered John to take that bottle away from that hungry baby as a punishment for both John and the child for crimes neither of them had committed. However, John happens to be the dictator's personal hypnotist and has given the dictator a post-hypnotic suggestion that forced the dictator to order the strange punishment in the first place. But if John had not given the order to the dictator, that post-hypnotic suggestion, evil enemy foreign agents would kill John's wife and his children who are being held captive. Despite everything, John secretly enjoys taking the bottle away from the baby and even hopes that this relatively mild act has a serious and deeply negative side effect on the child's future psychological dynamics. And he is very glad that his family is being held hostage, and it's a pretty good excuse to do all of this. In actuality, John is asleep and is merely dreaming all the previous events and actions. Is he jerking you around like he jerked me around the edge, you SOB? But John has detailedly self-hypnotized himself into dreaming this dream with instructions to himself that he will have a completely conscious total recall of this dream upon awakening. So ask yourself, and here's his little questions. Why did I continue to read this when I was forewarned this was a tale of evil? When do I know enough to decide anything? How do I know I've collected enough information? Why was I absolutely certain that reading this exercise was okay? What is the basis of my daily confidence in the many actions I perform? And John never really existed. Just now, using my brain in this exercise, I freely, willingly, and mentally created John and his twisted universe with no guilt on my part whatsoever, and manufacturing him, his environment, and his actions, breathing life into the potentiality of these exercises' words. What is the value of this creativity on my part? Have I added to the real universe's total evil? No matter how small or abstract, does any manifestation of evil still count? Blah, 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 blah. Bunch of other stuff. So what I'm trying to say, reading you all these things today, is no matter what I tell you today, it's not going to be enough information, number one. And I just like to twist things around and try to provide some different angles. And the biggest thing I believe that many of you, I have a lot of healers in the room and teacher persons, and one of the things you're going to be seeing out there is a real divide between those who are waking up and those who just really want to buy Pepsodent for the rest of their life. And there's not a good or a wrong, a right, up, down way. It's just there's a division. And the unfortunate part, those who are caught in the middle and can't seem to decide which way to go are having a lot of dis-ease. You're going to see a lot of illnesses. You might even run through some of it yourself or feeling exhausted. And part of that is a resistance to depression. And so we're going to talk today about why depression is a good thing and how spirituality is useless. And so how many of you believe you're spiritual people? Bearing in mind, Rob just said it's useless to go, God, yeah, like I'm going to raise my hand now. Yeah. And so, spirituality to me is no different than defining something as a politician or I'm a Christian. Or it's a paradigm that measures, and spirituality often intimates a person with insight and some level of goodness they've attained and would not do evil things. And to me, spirituality is just one more paradigm to measure yourself in. And then as you graduate it, which I imagine most of you are doing, and one of the ways you'll know you're graduating it is you'll start using the word soulful in your vocabulary. I believe Time magazine within the next 2 or 3 years will have a cover article saying, is there a soul? Just like they said, is God dead? You're going to see it more and more. And when I first started doing this talk last month, I said you're going to start seeing it. I saw it the commercial day before yesterday. For a deep soulful cleansing, well, almost. This, and then they talk about the soap. And I went, sons of bitches, they're already doing it. I thought we were a couple of years ahead of time. This toothpaste box I have up here, I wanted to get a Tom's of Maine one and re-edit it, but I have Pepsodent today. And if you look real closely, it says Pepsodent, the spiritual toothpaste. You guys are laughing. It's not there yet. But in the near future, it's going to say that, most likely on Tom's of Maine first. And what will make that appropriate is it'll say, well, it has rescue remedy, or Bach flower essence, or holly, or some sort of homeopathic ingredient. And everybody go, oh, yeah, spiritual, okay. Spiritual is a Madison Avenue term now. And it's going to be used to get you to feel you're on the right track. Watch out for it. It's time to start letting go in this divide of the concept of spiritual. WWJD, what would Jesus do? And seeing the bracelets. And inside, I thought they should at least engrave, not what he did, it got his ass killed. You know, and I hope they recognize by emulating him, they're on the path of destruction. You know, it's like, duh. It's like fairy tales. Everybody wants a fairy tale life till you read a fairy tale and you realize it sucks. The only good part's that last little paragraph, woke up and lived happily ever after. So in order to understand the depression or go with the direction I'm going, I hope it's comfortable to some degree to let go of the concept of spirituality or giggle at yourself. And do this, feel in your body the word soulful and then feel the word spiritual. And soulful just so far outweighs the word spiritual. Spiritual is like just a feather. And it's time to incorporate soulful more in your vocabulary to be more of a soulful person. So I believe Adolf Hitler's a soulful person, Jeffrey Dahmer. The fun part about soulfulness, it is just here to do what you came to do as a core eminence. Good, bad, up, down, right, or left, so that we can all have appropriate, honest mirrors to reflect upon, including our own projection for other people, instead of this wonder bread, core of the white bread loaf sort of reality everybody's been doing. And that in order to promote that white bread reality, most of you were told that you should be a different person than you are. And depression in my vocabulary is that I'd say most everybody in America has it. I've seen very few people that haven't had it, will have it, are in it. And the minute you give up your identity, the minute you do what I believe is original sin, and original sin is give up your true essence of self, and you become taller, shorter, dressier, quieter, righter, lefter, blonder, brunetter, smarter, dumber, more Kentuckian, more Californian, more right, up, left, black, white. So it's all that boring stuff that we should become so we can stay safe, or be loved, or feel powerful, or valuable. That setup, that moment, and by the way, you'll all know you did it. If you ever shut up when you wanted to talk, if you ever talked when because they made you and you'd rather be quiet. If you dressed a certain way and you weren't comfortable with it, you decided, I need to fit into this space, so I'm going to do this behavior. Is there anybody in this room who hasn't switched at some point their personality? And they're very, very rare. There are a few of them on the planet, but most people think they're idiots because they just would refuse to march to this drummer. Usually we hang them, shoot them, eliminate them, so that we can be just a bunch of depressed people. How many of you have been told that depression is a bad thing? That if you're depressed, you're weak, you are incompetent, you're a failure, you don't have a clue how to live your life, and all I ever see with depression is the proof that you gave up your identity. I have never, ever met a three-month-old that has a self-esteem issue. I've never met a depressed three-month-old. I've seen people with biochemical changes that they can manage to end the biochemical depression, but the main depression that I see mess with people is the depression they have about being depressed. When I see people really be depressed, they're depressed that they're depressed. And they're depressed that they can't get out of it. And how many of you were told you should Hansel and Gretel your way out of this? You better leave some breadcrumbs and hope no bird comes and eats them, because the deeper you go in depression, it's just the longer out. And I believe depression is a gift. It is a fireman's flame-proof suit. It's the candy coating on an M&M. It's a hazardous material suit. It is a protective energy between the original essence of you, the soulful you, the just radiant you, and the imposter. The different version you become of yourself. And by the way, you think it's the original you because it's pretty tied into it. It's just taller, shorter, quieter, nicer, louder, sugar and spice and everything nice. A lot of powerful women in this room and some violent men. So the men are told we should be tough guys and we're just a bunch of women. And the women are told sugar and spice, you guys can kick our asses. And it just makes me giggle. America is so full of these role reversals. How the violent era is intense. So here's this imposter. For the sake of the tape, I believe we're going to make the original us planet Earth, this crystalline gem in the universe. And then we start circling around it like a satellite. And so some of these interesting feelings come as we start circling, hoping to go home. I don't feel at home on this planet. This isn't my place. Nobody understands me. I feel out in the ozone. They tell me I'm really out there. So how many of you had that wonderful feeling of not, beam me up, Scotty? I've seen that a million times on bumper stickers. I'm not at home. You know what? You're not at home. But it's not about I need to go back to my home planet in the way most people think. It's not that this place is so bad. It's just the once I give up my identity and I send myself in orbit and I become this version of myself, I eventually have an aversion to it. And what's between me and the original me is a layer of depression. It is the atmosphere that keeps you from going home and fucking with the innocent you. So if you start circling and you feel the gravity of the situation is pulling you in, so you try to like, okay, I'll go home. Oh, shit, man. How many of you tried that? Just went in a little bit and, okay, that sucks. I'd rather be this form of miserable than that form of miserable. At least I know how to get the imposter around the planet a few more times. And it's just we keep going in circles. Repeat until you remember. Do in the loop. The secret is, and so you got, by the way, all the time in the universe, is to go through the processes you need to do to get the insight that you gave up your identity, second, you've lied to yourself to convince yourself that this is the identity you should be, you've manufactured an environment around you to force that identity to be validated, and at everyone else's expense, like, oh, I'm mad at you because you didn't do this, or I like you, you make me feel the way I wanted to feel, thank you very much, please never change. It's that I love you. I really love you, Linda. I love how you feel, and I feel in relation to how you're being. You're never going to change, are you now? And I always thought the cops would say, freeze or I'll shoot you. I love you. And if you move, you're dead. So, and watch out for that. And sometimes we really do love you. But more often than not, the appropriate answer when somebody says, I love you, is, oh, I'm not scared of you either.
There's a flip side of it.
Absolutely. Well, there's more than a flip side. There's 100 sides to it. The secret in the flip side is we just have to go through our layers.
Well, the alien stuff is real. I'm happy now that I recognize that I am an alien.
Yes.
When I was trying to be like everybody else, but I wasn't happy.
That's it. For the sake of the tape, because it might not record here, the alien stuff is real. Here's the most important thing you get to know. There is not a single thing here that is not real. This is a place of everything. There are vampires, there are angels, there are aliens, there are alien hunters. There are people who really are not connected to anything but this one lifetime on this planet. They're those annuals. There's perennial people, there's annual people. But some of you have been here a million times. I every day, especially in Kentucky, walk into these people who have been here just one day. You can just tell, damn, I don't have a fucking clue what this. For those of you who aren't in Kentucky, trust me. Bless me. So this tape's probably going to go around the world, so just believe me on this one.
I don't want to come here.
I just said some of them. And the more east I go, the more scary it is. And so it's just that there's a place everywhere for everybody on this planet. If you want to come and have a lifetime's experience of oppression, there's places for it. If you want to come and be a lifetime on the beach, there's places for it. If you want to have a lifetime's experience of ignorance, there's places for it. If you want to just be so focused on the ground and will that potato grow or not. There is a place where your whole life can be focused on that. If you want to be with the animals in nature, there's a place to do that. If you want to have a Pleiadian, Venusian, Zygmarubian experience, I mean, there's unlimited numbers of planet stuff. The real secret is discovering your essence, not identifying it. Spirituality and all those things are like I'm a Christian, or I'm a vegetarian, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. Those are just little tricks. We are everything. In fact, we only are what we are in the moment. And that's when we gave up our identity, trying to be something we would or should or could be. Some of you have heard me ask this before, but I'm going to play with it again, because a couple of you haven't. So how many people in this room are vegetarians? How many of you are breatharians? How many are gumarians? How many? There's a waterarian. I see her. There's a waterarian. And how many of you are carnivores? And the trick is, the only thing I see in this room right now is one gumarian, one waterarian, because she was drinking while I said it, and a whole bunch of breatharians. Because you only are what you are right now. And I love this when I ask vegetarians in California, the whole room raises their hand. They're so proud. And I go, great, open your mouths. And they go, what? I say, you're eating vegetables right now, right? Well, no, we're not. Well, how long have you been vegetarian? Well, I've been a vegetarian most of my life. Oh, most of, okay. I've been this. So you're basing yourself on something you did in the past, but you also ate meat in the past. So you're neither. You are a meat-eating vegetarian. You are. If you're going to base yourself on previous experiences, you are everything you stuffed in your mouth. I am a gum breath, water, plastic, that glue when you're 5 years old. That tastes so good, by the way. Isn't that good stuff? I still miss it. I want to just spritz it out, let it get dry, and just chew on it. It's the greatest stuff. By the way, we have that all around the world. We had that in Europe, too. It's not just an American fetish. This is an Italian fetish. That you know the glue I'm talking about, right? That's great stuff. So the bottom line to all of this is the setup in America, especially, is everybody's always trying to define everything. You know, am I tall, short, blonde, what day is it, what time is it? And G-O-D to me stands for I got over defining, or at least get over defining. Be still and know that you are undefined. And if you try to go ahead and define God to me, basically when you're done wasting about 6 hours doing it, you go, well, you know, God's undefinable. We get to go, yeah, we knew that. So in this era of transition, those that are resisting the translation through depression are getting sick and dying. And I've talked about this before, but I want to reiterate it. I hardly ever count stuff, but there are four stages I've noticed people go through in attempting to just express their authentic, full, soulful self. And the first one I see every child do. This is who I am, take it or leave it, and you can't make me do anything different. And then, of course, that we go, oh, yeah? Well, I'll show you. We'll teach you how to be a foreign object that circles your own reality for the rest of your life. How dare you? And so, you're too noisy. You're too quiet. I wish you were a boy. I wish you were a girl. I wish you were taller, shorter. Was there an academic in the woodpile? Where'd you come from? So what happens is most children are the ones who really tell their truth, and that lasts a brief period of time. And then most people go right to stage two, which is drama and crisis. You finally made me so mad, I'm going to tell you how I really feel. The only way to get you to feed me is I have to cry. You're not psychically in tune with my digestive systems. There actually are parents on the planet that know intuitively when to feed their children, and their children never cry to eat. It's a very rare experience. But there are such people who are not so distracted with the rest of their life. And, you know, it's tough. Unless you're a single mom living on an Indian reservation, not surrounded by nothing, it's pretty tough to make anything but that your total focus. Or it will exhaust you, huh, Vicki? Especially if you have an indigo. So stage two is just simply when people do drama and crisis, they're trying to say, hey, I want to just honestly live whatever it is I'm living. So stage three is dis-ease. I'm sick and tired of this process. First one is, let's say, I don't want to go to school, Mom. Well, you have to go to school. It's the law, plus I've had you for 5 years. You're driving me nuts. Go to school. So the teacher hates me. The bus drivers mean me. The kids pull my hair. So the drama, you finally made me so mad, I'm going to tell you how I really feel. And then stage three is, I'm sick and tired of this. God, Mom, you know, I'm so sick. I'm going to make myself sick. Children are great. They can make themselves sick not to do something. I've even seen them just throw up right in front of you. Just bleh, and go, wow, you must not really want to do that. No shit, Dad. Stage three, dis-ease. Every one of you, you has a magic number in your family. What temperature was it that got you out of school? 100 or 101, 102? And now if you have a 100 degree temperature for over 2 weeks and they figure it's just a chronic temperature, sorry, you have to go back to school now. Oh shit, do I have to amp this temperature up? What if I get leukemia? Ah, now I don't. Of course, here's the trick to this. As we go from dis-ease to the final stage, which is pending death, By the way, I'm talking physiologically, but pending death could be, I need to move, I'm getting divorced, quitting this job, I don't feel that this style of vibrating is appropriate anymore, but it's more of a termination than it is a natural change. All we're trying to say is stage one, this is my truth. We go through all these processes to get to it. And so watch for that in your own bodies. If you're starting to feel the stress, and to me the real truth is just not to have an identity. Not to, I should be quieter, taller, I should have more money, less money, I'm a mom now, I gotta be a mom, I'm a businesswoman, I have to be a businesswoman, I should be a nice guy, a good guy, tall person, short, right? It's gonna take a lot of bravery watching how everything's spinning so fast now. What you think is an identity today, by the time you even announce it, it's too late. You are not that person anymore. And it, now in the 60s and prior to that, everything was just nice and slow. And it took eons for something to change. By the time it exits your mouth or hits your cortical or limbic region, it is now a passé thought. So we're going to be working on this defining stuff. And depression to me is the layer that protects you so that this innocent, undefined essence, just this radiant little being, doesn't get nuked by Mr. or Mrs. Bullshit out here, goes, well, I've got money and I'm beautiful and I'm young and I'm happy and I'm this, and I'm a spiritual person and I know everything and I'm an academic and I'm righteous and I help everybody and I'm indispensable and I'm a good Samaritan. And as soon as I get back in here, I'll show that innocent little person that they didn't have a clue about how cool it could be to be all these things. So in the world of depression, when you try to re-enter it, whoa, we go back out. Or we go back in, get comfortable with it, and start circling at the new layer. We're still trying to work our way in. And I akin it to the Mercury program in the 60s when they were doing the space capsules. So when they try to re-enter, if you don't re-enter at the right angle, you burn up. Big time. So all you've been trying to do is find the right angle. Then you test it, go, nope, okay. And you test it, nope. And what we're finally into an era now is that all the tests most people were taught were tests of identification. This personality will do it. This level of goodness will do it. This spiritual person, certainly only a spiritual person is allowed to enter the kingdom of heaven. Only a spiritual person can re-enter through the bullshit atmosphere of loneliness and isolation, dark night of the soul. As we go into it, by the way, even when you do the perfect and right angle, there's still friction, there's still heat, and my favorite part about it is it's just you against the world. Because as you re-enter it, you remember, any of you remember that? Well, we're not going to get to hear from them for 3 minutes. We hope they make it. And so we lose you. We don't know. And you're surrounded by all these people wishing you, come on, you're going to do it. But hell, you don't know. You're just hoping you don't burn up. The only thing, don't disintegrate. Yeah. And that was the biggest fear anyways, essentially, was I don't want to disintegrate this essence. It's going to take a lot of bravery to go through this depression. An important question. We were talking about dogs earlier. How far is it a dog can go into the forest? And there's a lot of answers. The answer I'm looking for is halfways. So once a dog goes halfways into the forest, it's going out of the forest. And so I'm going to switch this over to this. How far can one really go into depression? And I really believe it's halfways. But again, taking that forest metaphor, when you pass the halfway point in the forest, unless there's a little chalk line or a welcome to the halfway point, you don't know it. It just looks like you're getting deeper in shit. Many of you have gotten almost out of the forest, I turned around and went out and said, man, it's such a long journey out. If I take one step more forward, I will never get out of this. And we lied to you so that we could sell you Pepsodent, the spiritual toothpaste. We lied to you so that you would buy things and dress things and learn a certain language and talk a certain way. These are the breadcrumbs that will help you get back to being the imposter you were that you're so comfortable and familiar with, yet exhausted from and not happy with. So the big transition that's happening now is not to be depressed about being depressed. Brag about it. Be proud of it. I'm depressed, aren't you? I want to sell buttons. Instead of no depression with a line through it, it's going to have a happy face with depression written on it. Because one of the things is if you'll give yourself permission to know what the depression is, if you were going home, wouldn't you be excited? Haven't you all worked your asses off to attempt to go home? And so the real depression I see many people have that switches their biochemistry is the long-term chronic depression over being depressed, the terror that depression provides. If I give in to depression, I'll be a non-productive, non-functioning human. They eventually will get sick and tired of caring for me. Maybe they'll help me a week or two, but if this is years long, then I'm a burden. They'll just put me on the streets. Oh my God, there's so many homeless people everywhere. I'll just be one of them. And now the funny part about the homeless problem, everybody calls it the homeless problem where I live. I said, the only problem with the homeless problem is they don't die. And most people that worry about being homeless are going, oh God, I'm going to be on the streets, I have no survival skills. We don't have in San Francisco a body count every day on the news. Remember in Vietnam, we did body counts. We were counting how many dead people there were. Americans love counting shit. So why aren't we counting how many dead homeless people? Six more rotten, smelly homeless people removed off Market Street. Because they don't die any differently than we do. And so guess what? What's there to be afraid of? You'll survive. And you'll survive just, I thought you'll survive just as well that way as you do this way. If in fact that's one of your worst fears. I have a room mostly full of women. One of the fears we do a really good job on you guys on is that you need some guy. You know, you need our income, you need us. And I see a lot of women in this room who actually are doing it on their own. In fact, there's only one that pretty much goes, oh good, somebody to help me. And he's just like me, you're in deep shit. He even writes left-handed, like as soon as I saw that, I thought, God, Lucian, she's screwed. Yeah. He's a sweetheart, but who needs sweethearts? Fuck 'em, we need men. It's time to get rid of us sweethearts. We need a real man. No, I agree. I'm actually in a backhanded fashion bragging about us. I'm very grateful for us. It's just that sometimes we're a bit useless. We make a little extra work for you on occasion. Us men like this are so glad you women like remembering shit. Remember when you said that back in 1986? I actually don't, but I do believe you. It sucks what you're saying, but I trust that it's true. We're entering an era that requires another look at trust also in regards to this depression, because we were kind of hoping as we're drowning we can hang on to somebody or a concept. And I have a lot of people say to me, when I do readings, they'll bring a picture. Can I trust this person? I said, if that was Adolf Hitler and you're Jewish and he invites you to a shower, I'd trust him. And they look at me like, whoa. And I said, here's what I mean by trust. Trust is a byproduct of America's preoccupation with the illusion of security and the fundamental right to all be on the same team. Now, it's a country of entitlement and everybody's to each his own, but they won't admit it because nobody's brave enough to say, fuck the rest of you. I want to cross the line. I know we're all going to be good sports and good winners. And trust to me is trust this. Trust that we're human beings. Therefore, we don't have a fucking clue what we're going to do a half a second from now. Everything we promised today is bullshit. Not because we didn't mean it, even though some of us don't mean it. Sometimes the ones who don't mean it end up doing the thing they promised because by saying it enough times, they start to buy into it. But most of us really believe what we say we're doing and thinking, but then circumstances change. Oh my God. And little children are here to teach us the appropriate way to make trust or truth happen. Are you going to clean your room? I'd like to. I hope so. I imagine so. Maybe. After that commercial? Yes, after that commercial. You know, after that commercial, is that, what year are we talking about, Dad? if you're driving a car and you're really being honest, and let's say we're going to go up to that corner and turn right. In fact, we can see it. There's where we're going. There's the sign. And I say to you, hey, we're going to turn right at the corner, aren't we? If you say yes to me, I'll go, liar. You would like to turn right at the corner. You're imagining you'll turn right at the corner. You hope that everything stays in line to do it, but the car might not agree. The road might be under different conditions. What if somebody has an accident in front of you and blocks it off? You're going to have to go left a few times. And so the setup is, until you actually have turned, you can say, I am doing it, as you seem to be doing. I'm in the process of it. I have done it, but I'm going to do it. Little kids do that all the time. Any of you have kids? You have people? Pin them down. You're going to do this, right? Maybe. They almost like choke it up. And we teach them to say yes. Say yes to me. Yes. And when they do it, you can tell. They're going, fuck, I can't. That's not right. In their whole body. And watch it sometimes. I used to make my kids say yes just to say to them back, how did that feel? Don't ever have anybody make you say yes. Say maybe. I'd like to. I imagine so. I believe so. It's possible. It all seems to be going that way. But I'm not sure. Even though, you know, would you like to go open your Christmas presents now? Damn right. That's the one and only time. Because I've asked them what they'd like to do. Now, are you going to go open your Christmas presents now? They don't care about that. By the time you finish asking them that, they're already there. Or Hanukkah presents, depending on who we're talking to. So the homework here in this depression is to be brave enough to realize you've tried to form certain identities, they don't serve you, and the four stages will show you where you are in that resistance. Are we really living our truth and feeling at ease and not having this friction and this burning up heart? Are we going into some form of drama and crisis? in order to point it out that we're not paying attention? Have we pushed the drama and crisis into not feeling well? We're about to enter, just now today it got cold here. And I giggle because they're going to start calling it any day now so we can sell you more shit, the spiritual cough medicine. It's going to say it's cold and flu season. And it's been my fascination that colds and flu have more to do with too much going on during a season of hibernation. Saying, like in stage two, drama and crisis, or stage three, I have to now enter into what we call the holiday season. How many of you, no matter how much you love your family, look really forward to that family gathering or two you're going to have? And knowing that there's that uncle I still have to talk to, and oh, Mom, you're going to make us all feel guilty tonight, and Dad's going to talk about how goddamn expensive this is, you know, you should all be grateful, you know. So I'm really looking forward to that adventure. And so if you're not going to want to be there, and or you're trying to create a little drama, oh, you know, Johnny's sick today. Get sick, Johnny, please. I left the windows open last night so he could get sick. It was an accident, you know. So that's how much I don't want to see you, Mom. I didn't mean it. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say it. So now I get sick. My favorite. It's the get out of work thing. I can't come into work now. This is not the cold and flu season. This is I don't want to fucking see my family season. And if, well, of course, you can't put that on cough medicine because then you have to admit in taking that, you know, shit, how they could sell it because if I take that, I have to go see my family. I'm not taking that medicine for all the time. I'd rather stay sick. So watch for that setup. As we go through, you're going to see more and more people as we split it off. And you guys are in a part of the country where everything's really going. I often say to quote-unquote spiritual people that it's your fault the world's such a fucking nightmare. And here's how I see it. Is it true that everything seeks balance here? Homeostasis. Well, if you were walking along the sidewalk, everybody starts walking in a rhythm. We have a room full of women. Don't spend too much time together. Your periods will all be on the exact same schedule. I mean, biochemically we seek a homeostasis that's beyond verbal communication. And so if that's the truth, and you guys are working your asses off to make this a better place, so you've lifted the scales up this way, then it's your goddamn fault that all these fucking assholes are doing what they're doing in order to keep it in balance. It's a paradox. Is it really possibly true that the more enlightened you become, the more aware of yourself, the more healthy, that all you've done is tip the scales? Then watch for that. It's an era of great enlightenment and insight on many people's parts, more information than ever, and it's going nuts. And the divide, you have the Church of 18,000 or whatever that is here. I'm going to be driving by it tonight. I will bless it as I go by. I can hardly wait to see it. I hear it looks like a football stadium. I mean, it seems so Kentucky. Do I have to go by it like this? No. It's complex. So it's probably like where I'm at home, where all the .com companies are. Just this big corporate headquarters for God.
Newspaper bigger than my hometown news.
Isn't that amazing? And so by the way, I giggle about any sort of paradigm, even my own. We do create these systems so that we can measure ourselves in time and space. Am I a good Christian? Am I not? Did I dress right or didn't I? Do they love me? Don't they? Here's my family. These are, and I see a lot of people.
Keep how would you know?
That's,
I mean, it's like it's.
It's no different
it's
than a town.
Action of anonymity. It's not.
It is. It's fascinating, isn't it? How that works. I have a number of friends that go there. That really love it and have great loving relationships. I watch out so much for the spirituality of it. I believe it recreates any of these paradigms. It recreates the opportunity to recreate your family and to do it better, more homely, right, left, up and down. But the more, you know, that's the setup. Well, if you work at IBM, you have to be a corporate person. You have to sing the IBM song and do this. So watch out, even in the term of spirituality. In California, where I live, it's real easy to tell a spiritual person. They have hairy legs, they wear Birkenstocks, they have earrings that drag on the ground, and their dresses are pointed at the end and layered. And they usually say things like, wow, you need to go see the homeopath, man. Or my chiropractor says, did you get networked yet, buddy? You know? And so I call that whipped cream on shit. You can walk it, talk it, look like it, but what's really going on inside? A lot of people have created what they consider these outward measurements that tell them they did okay. I'm a good person, bad person. I would love to go to that place with some prostitute with the sparkly little hot pants and spikes and the bluest of blue eyes out to here. And I'll have my tattoos and I'll have my Harley shirt on and I just won't wash my hair for a month. And I'll see how fast it is I get to be booted out of that front row seat. And that's the setup in the major organization. There are churches actually that are there truly to help those people, and there are churches that are truly there to tell themselves we've done well. That church your mom goes to is a fucking wealthy church.
Oh, yeah.
It is the bank account for that church. And so it doesn't have time for losers. Interestingly enough, unless they go reach out to them. I love it. An outreach program. It's not a bring in. If it was really a church, would it not be the bring them in program? Mm-hmm. It's always an outreach program, meaning we're going to go to you. Please don't fucking come here. Okay. Outreach. And so the setup in what we're going through depression, is it's forcing us to burn off all of these bullshit identities. I'm a nice person. I'm a sweet person. I'm a tall person, right person. I'm a good mom. And by the way, all of you have gotten different parts. It's really fun to see everybody. Linda's about to go be an attorney. You know, and how many times you've been told you're supposed to be so sweet and nice and shut up. And now she's about to go do a job where she gets to take no prisoners. And so burn it off. And we have a mom, but then not the kind of mom you thought it was going to be. You end up with an indigo. Are you a mom or a full-time jail guard? Trying to hang on to this person who wants to go out and teach the world when they're 6 months old. So in this process of depression, have joy that you're depressed. Be willing to acknowledge it. Watch out for all the shame that's out there. That's what keeps people depressed about depression. By the way, depression isn't like, I just my life and everybody hates me. Depression can be, you have a big smile on your face. It's just that angst, that grief that's inside, the disconnection, that sense of disintegration. And the truth shall make you free, or set you free, or it's about speaking the truth. Breathing is one of the biggest ones. You guys hear me talk about it regularly. But I want to throw it on here again, see if we can fit it on this front part. As soon as I say breathe, I watch everybody take a breath in the room. Now, what you've been taught when you're listening, you should listen carefully. Listen carefully, young lady. And so, okay, we hold our breath to listen. So it's not just, it gets exaggerated when you're listening to someone talk, especially someone like me that has a lot to say and is talking fast and you never know where he's going. I didn't understand it, but if I turn to the person next to me to say, what did he say? By the time he did, I'm 6 seconds behind. I have Mary Dicker Tabb psychosis. You guys know what Mary Dicker Tabb psychosis is? I'll make sure I teach you about all these clinical diagnoses I like making up. I'm going to write it down. Mary Tabb. So in the world of breathing, all you need is a reminder system. And I watched you all breathe so I could see that your lungs do work fine. And my favorite one is doorways. They're to me like you're in this room and it's a totally different reality than that room. And so when you go from, pardon me, Barbara Walters, when you go from this womb to that womb, when you rebirth yourself through this rectangular vagina, it actually squeezes you and you take a breath. Watch when you go through doors. Everybody takes a breath. Makes me giggle. They just don't know they're doing it. It's like when I was in high school and I watched the high jumpers. Everybody in the crowd would lift their leg when the person jumps. And you just laugh. You just sit there and then nobody knows they're doing it. They're helping them over. Everybody. Do you think you wouldn't do it? You go, no, help that person over. It's amazing. We unconsciously breathe when we go through things. And I'll show you. I sat in the spot I'm in on purpose for you guys. The people listening to the tape don't get to see it. So I'm sitting in the middle of this archway. It's a weird spot to sit. If I move in this few inches, feel better? I'm sitting in the dividing line. I'm kind of stuck in the birth canal right now. And if I move just a foot back, I feel like I'm talking to you guys from Shea Stone. I'm outside of it. And so what I usually attempt to do when I have the opportunity is I like sitting right in the middle. I always like dancing between both worlds. So you kind of feel me here, but don't feel me here. If I want to say something real connected, I lean forward. If I want to fuck with you, I lean back. Doorways, if you'll just use them, you go through how many in a day, just take one breath as you go through. You're already doing it, but pay attention. And what we're hoping to do is get you to unconsciously breathe more deeply. Right now, your intercostal muscles and your diaphragm are used to triggering shallowly. And when you're not thinking, because if I get too inspired or too fulfilled, or if I take a deep enough breath, heaven help me, I might actually blend my heart and my mind. I might get my body just as involved as my brain. I might actually be in my solar plexus. If I'm going to argue with any of you, even if you think it's cute, Okay. When I argue with you, Vicki, you'll go, okay, I'm going to get a breath, get in my solar plexus, I'm ready. Okay, give me your best shot, buddy. And if we're not in our solar plexus and not breathing as we just go through life, we're not prepared for everything. We're constantly being reactive personalities versus co-creative personalities, looking at our own projection and seeing how we're doing. It's like when two psychics meet each other and go, I can see you're fine, how am I? When you meet your reality, you're supposed to go out there, I can see you're fucked, how am I? You know, you're fine, how am I? Because what you're seeing is you. So breathe. Know you're going from one reality to another as you move through different spaces. Just this knowingness. Just knowing when you leave this room, instead of just thinking you're going in the hallway, you're stepping from a feet. I'm showing you how it feels. It's weird, isn't it, to have me sit, and now that I pointed it out to you, you know, that's why it felt so yicky. So now I can chat. I don't have to do this anymore. I'm going to come sit inside. It all this time it felt weird to you guys, I'm sure, and feels different. And now just by moving this one little inch inside the room, it makes it different. And if I move more so that my back isn't right against it, it'll feel comfortable, like I can close the door now. We're all in a nice cozy space, even though it's just a big opening behind me. Pay attention to how you enter into new psychic spaces. Breathe. What's the anticipation? What do you have as a thought about this room versus that room? This is just a transitional room. This is a room that gets you somewhere, and this is a place you've arrived. Get to play with these thoughts. And I think we're near the end of the tape. So we took a little break. We were talking about some things, and we were talking about adults, and that whenever somebody uses the word adult, it would behoove you to add aerated as fast as you possibly can, so the actual word becomes adulterated, because all you're going to see is a bunch of adulterated people who are in the process of becoming unadulterated. The bell curve bullshit lies. I was unadulterated when it began, and then you told me, what am I going to be when I grow up? And you promised me that somehow school would fix it. And I love that. It also goes with the lie that when you're big, you'll understand. The idiots who didn't understand were passing the buck on that one. Any of you understand yet, by the way? You're big. You seem big now. When you grow up, you'll understand. We do this whole bell curve, and on the other end come out and going, yeah, I'm just back where I started before I believed the lie. And it's becoming unadulterated. And so we were talking about animals and how they tell the truth or live the truth, and we all create different realities. There are people that one of the main things I see in the animal world is people love the authenticity of the animal, not just their honesty. A lion will eat you. We like that about that. You know, they don't go, gee, I hope you don't mind, but I'm a lion. I'm going to fucking eat you now. They're soulful. And it's that soulfulness. Is it not everything sweet and nice? Dogs, for the most part, unless it's a pack of wolves and they're hungry and you're there, even though you're a dog person, they're going to go, I'll bet she tastes even better. She's been seasoned and broken in. She has a certain dog softness, you know. A veal person. We've kept her in a shelter with a bunch of dogs. She's softened. Versus someone like me, if I had a dog, it'd be dead. I'm only home 60 days out of the year. Come on, new dog. I can't even have a house plant. Cactuses. I can't have cactus. And so the setup is, even in our animal world,